So what does Jesus do? Look at verse 4. He calls. Now, you say Jesus. The angel's speaking, but this book is the word of God. So this is literally the message Christ wanted his church to hear. Do you remember that map I keep showing you of Asia Minor and those seven churches? Those people read this, and they got it. And it says, I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins, lest you receive her plagues. What the Lord is saying is, don't get sucked into the materialism of this world. And there are seven elements of the worldly system that Jesus will bring an end to. They start in verse 21. But let me read to you James 4:4. Because remember, there's nothing new in the book of Revelation. And it's just hearkening back. And look what James 4:4 says. Adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Next verse. Do you think the scriptures say in vain, the spirit who dwells in you yearns jealously? The spirit who dwells in us? This is talking to Christians. Verse 5 says, Christians can be adulterers and adulteresses. What does that mean? It means we are engaged to Jesus Christ. We're supposed to be living, not laying up our treasures on earth, but in heaven. But all of a sudden, we've been lured away because Jesus isn't as clear as this suitor is, which is Satan saying, why don't you, instead of laying up your treasures in heaven, live for me for a little while? And Jesus said, you're not being faithful, engaged to me. You are listening to my enemy. Well, what are the seven elements of worldliness? They start in verse 21. So look at chapter 18, verse 21. And the angel took a stone, a great millstone, and threw down the Babylon, the city, will be thrown down and shall not be found anymore. What? Verse 22. The sound of harpists, musicians, flutists, trumpeters shall not be heard anymore. No craftsman of any craft shall be found. Do you remember what covetousness, materialism, what it is? It's making a good thing the ultimate thing that we live for. See, what God says is that we're supposed to eat in order to live. You know, we eat our daily bread so we can live another day. But most people live to eat. See, they're backward. Remember what Paul called it? Their God is their stomach. Their glory is in their shame. They mind earthly things. That's Philippians 3:3. But he said, you're not like that. Okay, what happens? Well, in verse 21, a worldly person's identity is found in the world, not in heaven. It's this stuff. Secondly, they find escape through amusements. Do you know what amusement means? M-U-S-E, muse, means to think deeply. You muse on the news. You know, you muse on whatever. It's a old English word for meditation. Ah, the letter A, is called the alpha privative. You put an A in front of stuff, and it means not whatever you put it in front of. That was just the little way that they built words when they were communicating and when our language was created and developed. And that muse means not thinking. People like amusements because they don't want to think. It's too hard to think, or there's too much pressure, or I'm depressed, or whatever it is. So a person finds escape through amusements, doing something to make me not think. Entertainment, something that pulls me away into that. And pleasure seeking. That's the list at the beginning of verse 22. The end of verse 22, worldly people use work, their success and career, even daily life, as a way out of spiritual responsibilities. They say, no, I can't, you know, husbands say, I can't lead the family in prayer and reading Bible. I have to go to work. But wait a minute, let's examine this. You have to go to work. Wait a minute. If you weren't so set on getting a bigger and better and more comfortable and more showy house, if you actually, instead of always trying to move upward materially, if you just got content, remember I told you about Wesley, when he started out in ministry, he earned 10 pounds a year, and he lived on 1 pound and gave away, or lived on 1.5 and gave away 8.5, and when he got to 100, he was living on 15 pounds and giving away 85, and when at the end of his life, he had written hundreds, thousands of hymns and was very globally famous, he earned 1,000 pounds a year, and he lived on 150 and gave away 850. Do you notice that he didn't let his income keep going up and raise his expenses to go with them. He capped off his expenses at a certain point. I had a good friend that was an elder in one of the churches I served, and his grandmother left him a farm in Oklahoma. Nice grandma. The largest oil drilling company in Oklahoma asked him if they could drill, and the first pipe they poked in the ground was the single largest wellhead pressure gas well they'd found in Oklahoma. And he started earning that day $50,000 a month. And he came to me and said, and no one knew this, and he came to me and he says, I'm serving the Lord here at the church. And he said, I said, oh, I know you really well. You're a good friend. He said, well, let's go out to lunch. I want to talk. He said, my family and I have decided we're going to live on $5,000 a month. He says, that's what we lived on with my job. And he said, I earned $60,000 a year. He's a successful businessman. But he says, what I want to talk to you about, I said, yes. He says, I'm now earning $50,000 a month. So that means I have $50,000 extra a month because I'm not going to spend it on me. What should I spend it on? Now, is that normal? No. What would most people do? $50,000 a month. Man, I can buy a gated, you know, multi-million dollar mansion on the water and fill it with boats and quit my job. He never quit his job, and he never bought. He still lives in this little house living on I think he still lives on $5,000 a month. And he gives away the rest. You see, a worldly person uses work, career, sex, success, even daily life as a way out of spiritual responsibilities to invest in heaven. A worldly person is tied to technology and the knowledge of this world. They're up on everything. I mean, they know everything going on technologically, and they're really involved in it. But you start talking to them about spiritual things, heavenly things, and it kind of gets fuzzy because they're tied. I mean, you talk about technology, and they just, woo! You know, I mean, they, iOS whatever just came out. Did you see the WWDC? And I mean, they're the newest version of this, and they can tell you about their gaming or their computer or their music or their newest Beats whatever. But you talk about the Lord, and they kind of, you know, they're tired or they feel a little. I'm overboard explaining this, but you get the idea. What excites you? If it's God, you're not worldly. If it's not God, you are worldly. A worldly person is tied to finances. They measure people by wealth and possessions, and that's their goal. And all their goals are financial. Did you know God says that a godly person's goals are not all financial? Yet you talk to everybody, and their goal is they're going to get a good job. Well, they got to get a good education to get a good job, and they're going to have a good 401 whatever, and they're going to save, and they're going to invest, and they're going to flip homes. And they're going to, of course, get crypto and boom, boom. And I hear when they're telling me that, that voice, Matthew 16:26, what does it profit if you gain the whole world? They're tied to that. They're intoxicated by the world. That's what makes them happy.